Welcome to today's episode of the Simply Financial Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Calandra. This is season 4, and it's episode number 26.
So I have a returning guest today, Kevin McGarry. You may remember that he's a sales executive and a leader in the financial services industry. He has a tremendous history of success. He has built some terrific, high-performing teams. His most recent assignment was as Vice President of National Sales at Nationwide. At Nationwide, prior to that, he was the leader of the Nationwide Retirement Institute, which is really a fabulous unit within Nationwide that focuses on educating financial advisors like myself about the latest retirement income planning trends. I also said last time I had Kevin on that my brother has worked with him and for him, and thinks the world of Kevin, as do I. Last time he was on, we had a wonderful conversation about his work getting his master's, and he's studying for his doctorate. We talked about leadership and millennials. If you haven't checked out that episode, you really ought to. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit more about him, where he grew up, just kind of like an everyday American kind of interview. He has some great rules and thoughts about money. I don't know about rules, great thoughts about money. So I asked him to come on and talk about it with me today. So, Kevin, thanks for giving me a few minutes.
Oh, you're welcome, Chris. I really appreciate it. Look forward to the conversation as well.
Yes. So last time we talked a lot about what you've learned as a business person, pursuing knowledge as a lifetime learner, getting your master's, as I said in the intro, pursuing your doctorate, leading successful teams. You've had a lot of success. But I'm curious, and even though you and I know each other, right, personally and professionally, and I know your wife both personally and professionally, and you know my brother, there's a lot of communication going on, right? But I don't know much about like where you came from. I only know you as the successful business guy and the husband of a very successful businesswoman. So when you were growing up, what kind of household did you grow up in? Was it a wealthy family? Would you describe it as poor, middle class? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, Chris, I grew up in Southbury, Connecticut, so not too far from where you are, and grew up middle class. You know, my mom was a nurse. My dad worked in a factory down in Bridgeport, and you know, two sisters, so just typical middle class Connecticut family.
So I'm just curious because I'm very into the personality characteristics depending on birth order. I would think that you're the oldest child, but then also something's nagging at me and says that you're the middle child. So I think if I was playing a trivia game, and I just invented my own with the Kevin McGarry guessing game, that you're the middle child. What are you?
That is correct. I am.
Okay.
I am the middle child.
All right. And just everybody should know that I'm not cheating. I really didn't know that answer. So you middle class upbringing. Your dad worked at a factory. Was he in the factory in a blue collar job role or a white collar job role?
It's kind of like a mix. He did quality control, so he worked in just making sure that the quality of things. He went to college, but had really focused on quality control coming out of the factory.
All right. And one of the questions that I like to ask guests in these formats is thinking about when you were younger, what some of your early memories about learning something about money, what could you recall?
So it's interesting, too. You think about money, and I go back to probably some of the conversations I overheard as a kid, heard from my father, and it was always, don't ever invest in the stock market. Put all your money into the bank, put it in a CD, don't take risk. You can't afford to lose it. And so what I learned early was that was probably not the right advice. And to understand the dynamic of being completely risk averse and the impact it can have on your finances overall.
So you're saying that at an early age, your dad was counseling this risk-averse attitude and avoidance of the stock market. And at an early age, you sensed that that probably wasn't the best advice? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, talking to my father, he always put money in the bank, didn't really, didn't invest. And, we grew up, never really had the money that to do some of the things that that we wanted to do. And so he had an opportunity to introduce me to some of his friends. So you look up at, the parents' friends and certain folks that were involved in finance or invested in the market tended to do a little bit better. You kind of sense that as you grow up and you see friends in, one house versus another, what their parents do and their attitude and look at money and the ability to say, are you saving? Are you planning? Does it make a difference? And I think you kind of pick up on those things as a young child. And as you continue to pay attention, it kind of grows on you that you do need to diversify. You need to be invested in businesses as you look at business owners and how they do and putting money back into their business to grow it versus just, not willing to take a risk.
So what was your first job then? You went to University of Connecticut and you your undergrad is in finance, right?
Yep.
What was your first job after college?
First job after college, I worked for Cigna as an internal wholesaler. So I got into the financial services space actually in college, working for a financial advisor with Smith Barney. And then from there, got into internal wholesaling with Cigna.
All right. So, and this is, this might be inappropriate. Maybe I'm crossing bounds and maybe you'll not be happy when I see you outside of the show. So your dad gives you this advice. You go off to school, and then your first job flies right in the face of the counsel you got. Some of your earliest memories about what you learned about money, you go and work for an investment company marketing stocks through mutual funds. Did I have that right?
That's exactly right.
All right. So I'm just curious, what does your dad say about that? Because the world changed, right? I mean, stocks in the 60s and 70s was not mainstream like it became in the 80s and 90s. A lot of things happened, demographics, tax policy-wise, the creation of the 401k, and before that the IRA. I mean, there were lots of things that created a different world than probably the one that your dad was giving you advice relative to. But still, it seems a little unusual that's an early memory, and then right out of the gate, you're doing investments. How does your dad react to that?
It's interesting because it comes down to, I think, risk averse, and he was very risk averse in finances, but he was also risk averse in life as well. Like, taking risks was not something that he did. But growing up, and maybe it's because I'm a middle child, right, going back to that, I'm a person that will take risks for some extent just for the adrenaline rush of taking the risk, but mostly for, take a risk to have that reward that comes with it. And I think for me, it's built in personality-wise that I'm willing to take a risk. I'm willing to bet on myself to say, hey, I can do this and actually be successful at it. And so, my career decisions, I think, didn't surprise my father, but yet were almost completely opposite of, some of the way that he took risks within his career and in his finances as well.
All right. Thanks for humoring me with that. I appreciate it. I'm curious, before we move on, your mom, a nurse, any thoughts about when you were young, money relative to your mom? Any remembrances?
She was, as a nurse, she was always someone that looked out and took care of people. So I think the way she looked at money was, she paid the bills. She also made sure that, you give money to charity, take care of the people that need it. And I think that was, embedded into her as who she was from a nurse, but also how she looked at money as, hey, we're going to, pay the bills, get that done. But then, what do you have to give money to the church, give money to maybe someone less fortunate as well.
Okay, very good. And you mentioned risk. And when you were thinking about risk, I have a feeling you were thinking less about investing in a risky stock versus a less risky stock. I have a feeling you were kind of talking about risk in terms of career moves. that mm-hmm. you seem to have a supreme confidence that you can get a job and you could make money and you'll take some career risks and you'll not rush into new opportunities because you really want to get into a good one. And you're very strategic and patient. And in some ways that's a little risky, but you're so confident. Is that what you were talking about with risk? Am I reading that right or am I wrong? And it's okay if I'm wrong, by the way.
I think it's a little bit of both, right? So if you talk to Chris and my wife, she's more conservative when it comes to investing. Like I'd be 100% in equities all the time. So even from an investing standpoint, I would take more risks than she will. So we balance each other out. She keeps me sane to some extent. And then from a career standpoint, I definitely will bet on myself and say, you know what, I know I can get this done and be successful. So I'll take what to others might look like a risk from a career choice, but yet is what I see is something that can drive success for a team or for an organization or for myself.
So that bet on yourself, that confidence that I could see in my interactions with you, which have not been many professionally, and you know we've been together socially a number of times over the years, but you have this confidence. It's not, it might be arrogance, but it definitely does not come across that way. You come across as very confident, comfortable in your skin, and you seem to be a man with a plan. So where does that confidence come from?
That's a good question. I don't know. But I think, you know, to some extent, that confidence probably comes from if you take a risk, you're going to be better off than where I am today. So if I look at, I'll give you a perfect example. At the beginning of my career, I was an internal wholesaler and in debt from college, in debt from credit cards, kind of, you know, we could talk about mismanaging credit card debt, you know, just mismanaging basically my finances early in my career. And I took a risk to become a wholesaler to take over a territory in Texas. And when I took that job, I knew I could do it, but it was also a risk because I literally maxed out my last credit card with a down payment on an apartment in Texas and said, I know I can do this, but you know, put a plan in place and say, hey, I'm going to get it done. But it's a risk that, you know, other folks I know wouldn't have taken because they didn't want to move, take a risk where they might not be successful. But then I also look at, you look at the downside and say, well, what's the worst? The worst thing that could happen is you take the job that you currently have or move back home and, you know, back to Connecticut, that is, with a similar job, but your upside is significant, right? So take that risk and take the opportunity to make something and really be successful over long term.
So I think that's very well said. I think what will stick with me is that, you know, bet on yourself. Not everybody does that, and I imagine there's a variety of reasons why that doesn't occur, but I think there's way more instances where I talk to someone and they become, let's say, unemployed, and they'll take the first job that comes just because, not so much because they have to, because some people really do need to financially and they'll do what they have to for their families, and that's noble and completely understandable. But I think in many other instances, though, they have a lack of confidence and they lack surety and they just figure, well, I lost my job and I'm weak and nobody's going to want me, and they perceive themselves at a position of weakness, and then they just take whatever they can get. They won't negotiate salary very hard, but you, with the betting on yourself, I think that's a good expression, and I think it captures being confident, and it's an element of risk that's different from risk of investments, because your earnings power, your job, or if you start or have a small business, that's really, really important, because that's going to power your wealth building for a very long time, separate from your nest egg. It takes a while to build a nest egg that counts more than the power of your income stream. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does.
So we talked in the last episode that we're Gen Xers. I'll be 50 this year. We're roughly the same age, I think. So I imagine maybe some of your views on money have changed over the years, especially as you and your wife, your incomes have gone up, your wealth has increased, you have experience. Can you talk a little bit about how some of your views on money have changed over the years?
Yeah, I think if I look over time, I used debt a lot more early in my life. Took a lot of college debt on, took a lot of credit card debt on, and over time, paid that off, put money aside, invested for the future. But my philosophy was early, which is take on debt because I'll be successful and I can pay it off in the future. And I know that by taking on that debt now, it's going to put me in a position to win for the future. So where I looked at being able to use money and use debt as a escalator to my own career success.
Sure, as a tool.
As a tool, right? But today I've got a nest egg. I've got dollars set aside where I don't need to take on that debt. So I've kind of changed and shifted the leverage points of finances, right? So from leveraging debt to now leveraging the capital markets and investing in long-term growth of stocks. And how does that work forward? So that's one. The other is early, and we talked a little bit about risk. I was much more apt to take risks. So I was much more aggressive as a younger individual than I am today. And part of that too is being married, having a daughter. My portfolio is much more diversified and not as risky as it was in the late 90s where I was day trading tech stocks.
All right, and so could we talk about, and you referenced it very early in the conversation as maybe being a negative. So let's talk about not so much the student loans, right? Because, as a 50-year-old advisor, I've grown increasingly sensitive about student loans. But it was different when I went to school because schools were not nearly as expensive. So you could take on some debt, go to school, and, within a short period of time in the working world at a reasonable income level, you could hammer away the student debt. There's far too many instances today where the debt will put a stranglehold on your finances for a very long time. But then also counsel people about credit card debt. Credit card debt is bad. Don't use credit cards. And the story that I heard from you about going to Texas, taking advantage of the opportunity, using the credit card as a tool to get you in a position to really leapfrog to some greater success, that's a good use of credit card. Now, that's aggressive. That's risky. But when you're young, that's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah, I think it's about using the tools that you have to your advantage, right? If you've got the ability to leverage and, I think student debt's a great example of this, right? You can take on debt now to amplify your income into the future. So it's a worthwhile debt to take because you should, in the future, be rewarded for taking that debt on.
Yes.
And credit cards, if you're taking credit card debt out to go out to dinner, that's probably not the best use of leveraging credit cards.
Right.
But if you're going to leverage that credit card debt to, create some additional opportunity for you, and maybe, it's a business or career opportunity you're taking on, loans to start a business, having a purpose for that debt, I think is really what I'm talking about, to get people to say, I'm taking this debt on purposefully, and I know what my return should be or what my upside opportunity will be in the future.
Yeah, no, that's good. You took me exactly where I was hoping we would go. So you had this credit card debt. Was some of the credit card debt you accumulated from consumer habits, like traveling, like going out drinking with your buddies or taking somebody on a date? Was some of it consumer where you were living above your means? Because I would want to separate out the credit card debt issue from something that I think is not too constructive, like those examples I just gave, versus I have this career opportunity. The timing is not exactly right, so I need to take some risk and use this tool. Those are two different things. I think using the credit card for that job opportunity and the relocation is much more aspirational than, boy, I went with my buddies on a cruise and, you know, I racked up $3,000 credit card debt.
Yeah, and I would say this, I don't want to put myself out there as, like, you know, using credit card the ideal way, because if the bulk of my credit card debt that I had going to Texas was generated through the lifestyle I had of having a summer house in Newport and visiting my buddies in Killington for the winter.
Okay.
Racking up debt for experiences versus
right.
career opportunities.
So looking back on it, you would say, hey, taking the risk using the credit card to relocate to Texas, you look back on that fondly as a good risk that paid off and was a good decision. But the reason why you maxed out your card was not because you relocated to Texas and needed to use the credit card. It was because the credit card already had a lot of debt from you enjoying
exactly.
a pretty nice lifestyle, it sounds like. Newport's one of my favorite places in the world, so I'm a little envious. But
I love Newport. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places in the world.
Yeah, it's I maxed out my credit card with moving to Texas, but most of that, to your point, most of that was generated through lifestyle. And,
yeah.
You know, that's where you learn, right? You over time, you say, you know what, I overspent on what I should have, and learned it early, which was actually a good thing for me.
Sure.
Then in Texas, I said, all right, now I got to buckle down and figure out, all right, how do you pay that off, pay off student loans, and as well as be successful in a new career down in Texas.
Beautiful. Good. No, that was really good. You, we talked about it in the other conversation we had for the previous episode, but you have extensive experience in managing high income earning sales teams, successful sales teams. Do they tend to be good at handling money is part one of the question. And part two, as the leader of these teams, do you tend to give financial advice to your teams?
I guess the first question, are they good at handling money? I would say some are, some aren't. And it's,
okay.
it's probably just typical, right? And then the challenge becomes as a leader of a, let's say, you know, at the time as a Fortune 100 company, you know, what can you give out as personal financial advice? So I ended up staying at a high level for financial advice. And a couple things that I would say is, one, I always was a proponent of a titanium balance sheet. And what do I mean by that is, if you were to not have your career, not have your job, are you financially set? Do you understand you've got your trust set up? If you're in a family, you've got life insurance set up if something was to happen on the road and you passed away. Do you have finances, your home structured in a way where your mortgage payment isn't too high to cover what you need on a month-to-month basis? Because the teams I was managing were sales teams, so some months were good, some months weren't. You know, were they living, you know, trying to give that advice of living within your means and knowing that your best year won't be every year. So living to where you want to, you know, have a life that you want to have, but then also know that you can't spend to your best, you know, your best year. You want to make sure that you can have that titanium balance sheet, have your credit cards paid off, have a plan to know that you are financially secure. And
nope.
part of that, I think, is this, which is, in my view, having a titanium balance sheet, having your finances in order as a sales professional, you make better financial decisions for your clients. And what I mean by that is, if I know that I've got a mortgage payment or something that I've got to do, as an individual, you're more apt to maybe recommend or make a bad suggestion. Whereas if you have a titanium balance sheet, you don't need to have that sale to make a car payment. You can make a better recommendation to the client. You can make a better recommendation to say, this is what's in your best interest, not mine, because I've got an income need that I have. I want to make sure that I can provide the best financial guidance for our clients.
No, I think that is so on target. That is so true. And also, the marketplace will sense desperation and
yeah.
will typically reject desperation. And if you have a plan and are financially moving towards your own goals. It does not need to mean that you need to be, you know, a billionaire or fabulously wealthy and have your own yacht. But if you're solid and you're heading in the right direction and you're building successfully with your own finances, you won't reek of that desperation that the marketplace will reject. And it is harder when you're desperate. And to your point, you're also likely then to cut corners, make mistakes, do things that you might not otherwise do, and that will be a setback because the marketplace, especially in today's day and age, will sniff that out, and people that are not playing by the rules will not be successful. You agree with that?
I would definitely agree with that. And you see that happen. It's unfortunate. But I'll say this, though. The other piece of advice that I have always given my teams is, you take the time to really sit down with a financial advisor. Make sure that you have a plan. You have a financial plan. You know when you're going to retire, how much you need. You have a plan to get there, what you need to save, what you need for rate of return, how much risk are you willing to take to get there. So to really have a financial plan. And the other component to that is, if you have a home, do you have a home equity line of credit? In case you need to tap into that home equity line of credit. You know, in 08, during the credit crisis, I was managing a sales team, and financial services, we saw a contraction in overall financial services professionals out there in the marketplace. And you can get a home equity line of credit if you have a job. You can't get a home equity line of credit if you don't have a job. And so one of the pieces of advice that I continue to give my teams has been, make sure you have access to credit if you need it. And you don't always have to take it, but if it's there if you need it, and you can get it when you don't need it, which is
important. Sure. It falls under the adage, which I am fond of saying, is better to have it and not need it, and need it and not have it. And the home equity line of credit is a neat tool as long as you respect it and you use it judiciously and don't abuse it. It is a good tool.
I would agree.
Yeah. So I don't think that you're necessarily a free spender. You and your wife are high income earners, successful business people. You've been around, so I'm going to assume you've accumulated some wealth. But can you give an example of something that either you or the two of you splurge on?
I would say the biggest thing we splurge on is travel. And I'm a firm believer in experiences. You can buy something, buy a car, you can feel good about it when you buy it. But if you go on a trip and you go on a trip with your family, you'll remember it. And so having those, the spend to travel on an experience that you can have and go back to, and you got pictures, and thoughts, and where were you when this happened. So we spend money on trips, and I'll give you a perfect example of kind of, can you create memories for me? I got an 8-year-old daughter. Can you create memories for her? And so last summer we went to Malta, which, as you may know, is in the Mediterranean, just south of Italy. And, I had an opportunity to spend 2 weeks there. And while we were there, we found out that you could actually feed tigers. And so I took, at the time, a 7-year-old to go feed tigers. It was a tremendous, inside the cage, sitting around with some tigers, and to see her at that age build up, one, the fear of going into a cage with tigers, and then two, feeding them, but then walking out and having the level of confidence she had in the stories that she would tell. It's great. She tells some individual stories to her friends, and the confidence that she got from that is, I think, really special. And the ability to say, hey, what do you splurge on? It's, travel and experiences for yourself, but also for your family.
That's awesome. In fact, I know you and Kristen had gone to Malta. Not only are you the only people I know that ever went to Malta, I don't even know anybody that's ever considered going to Malta. That's how innovative that is.
Yeah, it's a great country, and it was a tremendous trip. It was a lot of fun.
That's terrific. Well, Kevin, thanks for spending a few minutes with me today. I totally enjoyed the discussion. I hopefully we'll have you back on the show sometime soon. But listeners, Please subscribe to the podcast, recommend it to a friend, and also go to the website, elliottwealth.com, to find out about the services that we provide to our clients, helping them win with money. It's elliottwealth.com, and I'll be back with you on the next episode of the Simply Financial podcast very soon.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of SagePoint Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through SagePoint Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with SagePoint Financial.